welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And we're going to dive into, because we've got other content to cover. And so let me just go ahead and bring Paul back with us. And Paul, welcome back.
Hey, GR. Thank you. I'm here.
And so, folks, what we've got is we're in the final throes. It'll probably take us, I don't know, it's hard to tell, but based on where we are and what we still have to cover, I'm going to say it'll take us at least a week, if not possibly, you know, two. We'll see. So we'll try to get through this because, folks, we still need to get through the cod fishery bounties. We need to get through the Assumption Act. We need to get through the Whiskey Rebellion. And then we need to get through the 1798 resolutions and so forth. So there's a lot of stuff we want to get through before we get to the Constitution. And so, which is Constitution Day, which we'll start that. We'll start reading that on the 18th, Monday the 18th, because Constitution Day is on a Sunday. So that way, you know, we're gonna keep your plate full of content. Anywho, so Paul, at this point in time, there's this, you know, this discussion regarding ex post facto laws, and so this is Mr. Iredell, and this is the first time. Ex post facto laws that I can think of, because I can't think of any other state that talked about them. Do you? Sure. Do you remember?
I don't remember any other state talking about ex post facto. Oh,
okay, good.
It's mentioned in a couple of paragraphs above this right. line, but here we go.
All
I'm
right.
ready when you are.
There you go. Go ahead. Take off.
Okay. So it's Mr. Iredell. Mr. Chairman, with respect to this clause, it cannot have the operation contended for. There is nothing in the Constitution which affects our present paper money. It prohibits for the future the emitting of any, but it does not interfere with the paper money now actually in circulation in several states. There is an express clause which protects it. It provides that there shall be no ex post facto law. This would be ex post facto. If the construction contended for were right, as has been observed by another gentleman, if a suit were brought against a man in the federal court and execution should go against his property, I apprehend he would under this Constitution have a right to pay our paper money, there being nothing in the Constitution taking away the validity of it. Every individual in the United States will keep his eye watchfully over those who administer the general government, and no usurpation power will be acquiesced in.
Okay, so I'm gonna interrupt you right there.
Okay.
What you just really covered is that the Constitution itself, nor an amendment itself, can create an ex post facto law. In other words, okay. If they pass an amendment that basically says, you know, so just like the abolition of slavery. So when they basically ended slavery and they basically said you can't be slaves anymore or you can't have slaves anymore, then they couldn't necessarily go and punish anybody for that.
Right.
Because an ex post facto law means that they can come and they pass a law and turn what you're doing into a crime.
In other words, when they pass the law, it takes effect then. It doesn't take effect before it was passed.
Correct. Correct.
Right.
In other words, go ahead.
So in other words, you can't be punished for what you did in the past.
Because it was legal up until the point when the law was passed or the Constitution was amended. So at right. that point, slavery ended, but nobody could be held accountable. This is why reparations is absolutely unconstitutional.
Right. Correct. It's
one thing to get things right and to move forward, but it's another thing to seek vengeance in, you know, in pursuing civil cases and say, you owe me.
Oh, my. So, right. So the fact that there is that no ex post facto law is allowed pretty much rules out reparations. Can't be done.
Right. In any state.
Not under this Constitution.
Correct. And any state that tries to pay reparations or tries to go down that path of using, you know, this ex post facto law to say, oh, it's, you know, we were wrong in doing it. Well, okay, we stopped it, and that's it. I mean, you can't, you know, punish, and you, nor can you actually, you know, make this, you know, this, I'll just call it reparations.
Right.
The concept of reparations by government itself is repugnant because government has been by the will of the people up until that point. And when the people's right. will has changed, then it has changed and it moves forward. It doesn't look back and go, oh, well, we're really sorry. We're going to pay all these people that were affected. You know,
right.
Just to be clear, ex post facto laws were something that was absolutely a problem in Britain. And Britain, you know, used that as a mechanism to divide and conquer.
Sounds familiar.
Yes, it does. And so, I mean, Satan, every time you look at, you know, tools and mechanisms of dividing and conquering, it is an evil practice because what it does is it plays with people's, you know, heartstrings, emotions, and paradigms and say, well, that's just wrong. And it is wrong, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. why they outlawed ex post facto laws for both the federal government as well as state government. So go ahead. Keep on going.
Okay. The possibility of usurping powers ought not to be objected against it. Abuse may happen in any government. The only resource against usurpation is the inherent right of the people to prevent its exercise. This is the case in all free governments of the world. The people will resist if the government usurp powers not delegated to it. We must run the risk of abuse. We must take care to give no more power than is necessary, but having given that, we must submit to the possible dangers arising from it. So what I see here is that they're depending on the people to recognize when usurpation is happening and do something about it.
Yes, and so that goes in concert with the whole theme of the Constitution. Who is supposed to enforce the Constitution?
Well,
who executes the laws, the militia?
Well, it's the states. The states are the parties to the Constitution.
Yeah, the states are the parties to it. But right
and the
there,
people
in Article
in the states, right?
Right. No. So, Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15: Congress have the power to call forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union. So right. Who is the militia? The militia is we the people.
Right.
So in other words, that is the ultimate check on government is we the people.
Well, you know what else that means? It means if Congress doesn't exercise its power, the people still can.
That's right.
And in fact, they must.
Yes. That's right. So we have to start understanding the Constitution because as long as we're illiterate and we don't know how badly it's being violated, then they'll just continue making it up as they go. It's literally the kids have taken over. If you've ever watched kids when they start playing, especially very young, immature kids, they'll start creating a game, you know, and they'll make up the rules as they go along.
Right.
And then as they get older, they all start playing a game that everybody knows that it is an established game, like baseball or something else. And then there's some kid that starts changing the rules and some other kid goes, hey, he's making it up as he's going along. And,
right.
you know, and then, shoot, nobody wants to be accused of that. But bottom line, you know, the federal government has been literally getting away with because they created the persona. The federal court created the persona that they have the ultimate say.
Right.
And they don't. The states have the ultimate say. When it comes to determining what is constitutional, this is why I've said this several times. I've even said this as far as the presidential, you know, what America needs as a president on my Monday shows, is that when we look at the court, when we really look at the court, and if the court comes along and says, you know what, this is not very well defined, and let's just say it is a diligent court that uses the ratification debates to determine mm-hmm. how it was defined so that they don't make any mistakes. They do it right. And so all of a sudden they come across something, because we've actually reached, you know, territories such as this dysphoria, you know, all of these different things that have come in. Well, they didn't say anything about this. Well, clearly it always boils down to this. If it's not enumerated, they can't do it. But if the court feels like it is in the gray area, then they have to make a ruling on the case itself, which doesn't necessarily mean that that case is right. Or they can put aside their ruling. They can actually put aside their ruling and turn to Congress and say, Congress, you need to make a law, you know, regarding something that is in pursuant to the Constitution, or you need to go to the states with a recommended amendment to allow these things to happen, or basically we have to, you know, dispose of this case one way or the other.
So what you're saying is the Supreme Court can make a recommendation, but it can't tell us that we have to do something a certain way.
Right, because technically, if it is in the gray area for the Supreme Court, which means that it is questionable to their jurisdiction, what happens if all of a sudden they think it's in their jurisdiction and the case actually unfurls in front of them and it comes to realize, hey, this is something that really isn't enumerated in the Constitution, like life and abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Then the court should actually say, hey, we don't have jurisdiction. We remand this back to the states. This is a state issue. So the courts could actually suspend and determine whether they, you know, whether Congress can actually make a law. And that, in that point in time, the state should have a tip off to go, hold on here, what the heck just happened? The court, being honest and diligent, recognized and challenged the fact that they may not have jurisdiction. So now we need to look at this and determine whether we want the federal government to move forward with an amendment or to try to create an unconstitutional law. Because bottom line, if the court doesn't feel like it's within their jurisdiction and they go to Congress to either make a law or an amendment, if they can find it in pursuit, that should tip the states off instantly. The states... But the problem, the real problem we had, is we really relied upon the honor and integrity of these men, because we didn't have, you know, instant communications. We mm-hmm. couldn't get information from the states. I mean, we didn't have this, you know, within seconds response. It took weeks before they could find out what the heck these people thought in distant states. They didn't have telephones. And so everything had to... And it was a slow process, and it was a good process for the time. It was the best possible for the time. But there's no excuse. There's no excuse for them to be the single authority and to think that they can do anything and everything.
Right.
There's no excuse, and this is why we really need to start actually, you know, the states need to step in and actually taking back all these controls and forcing the federal government to actually do their bidding and coming to them more directly. There's an argument, because why does the Senate and the representatives, why is Congress in the, you know, in Washington, D.C.? Well, they needed to have a place because they didn't have virtual meetings. They couldn't be virtual. We have the full capacity. Talked about this in my book. We have the full capacity of being a virtual government now for a while.
Right.
Why haven't the states basically said, you know what, you're spending too much money, and one of the things is we're going to shut down D.C. or we're going to, you know, we're basically removing most of the representation of government from D.C. so that only the executive departments, which basically shuts down, I mean, there's thousands of people that are employed at the Capitol building.
Right.
And we could really change all of that and move all that back to the states. And so D.C. would actually experience for the first time in its existence a downturn in its housing market.
Let me ask you a question. Would you also put the Senate out of D.C. or would you leave them there?
So why there has to be a really good reason why they have to be there. And the only reason that they would have to be there is for real sensitive, you know, security type of stuff. So I've flipped on both ways of this regarding the Senate. I think that there can be the Senate, and maybe half the Senate, you know, because it's two, right? You know, maybe the senior senator would be in D.C. and the junior senator would actually be right there speaking and talking and working on a day-to-day basis with the state legislature. You know,
okay.
So I pointed this out, and I actually had a conversation. I know you know Woody. And so yes. I was talking to Woody, and, you know, I basically said, show me in the Constitution where the, you know, or actually in the 17th Amendment, show me the language of the 17th Amendment and how the 17th Amendment took away the suffrage of the state.
Right.
It didn't really. As a matter of fact, it did not address it. And so bottom line is, even though the apportionment and even though, you know, or I should say not the apportionment, but even though the selection has moved to the people, the Senate is still fully accountable to the state legislature. And as a matter of fact, the state legislature actually needs to step up and go, hey, this is absolutely crap because, you know, we no longer have, you know, we've got nothing but the cold shoulder. We no longer have any suffrage in the Senate. You don't even advise us. You basically work with globalists. You've moved the Senate into the hands of the globalists. And therefore, we're rescinding the 17th Amendment because they can.
But you need people, you need legislators who understand this.
I understand that. Right. I understand right. that. Yeah, I'm doing everything I can, Paul.
I know you are. You're doing your constitutional minutes. And I've shared them. I'm looking forward to you doing that again. So, yeah.
Okay, so let's get back to the ex post facto laws.
Yeah, okay. So right. Next paragraph.
Okay, correct.
With respect to the great weight of the northern states, it will not, on a candid examination, appear so great as the gentleman supposes. At present, the regulation of our representation is merely temporary. Whether greater or less, it will hereafter depend on actual population. The extent of this state is very great, almost equal to that of any state in the Union, and our population will probably be in proportion. To the north of Pennsylvania, there are 27 votes. To the south of Pennsylvania, there are 30 votes, leaving Pennsylvania out.
Okay, so hold on here.
Yeah, well, okay.
So he just gave you the mathematical layout of votes in the House of Representatives. 27 to the south, and how many to the north?
I think he said 27.
Okay.
He said 30.
Okay, 27 votes to the north, to the south it's 30, but that's at Pennsylvania. Right. So why was he using Pennsylvania? Look at where Pennsylvania is. What's right underneath Pennsylvania? Maryland, Delaware, right. Virginia, and so we know that those three states have already kind of acquiesced on the concept of, you know, not engaging in slavery.
Right.
So, and as a matter of fact, they were all kind of in favor of that as far as letting it go. It the only three states was the two Carolinas and Georgia. So, to be clear, he could actually, you know, make the argument that, you know, they should actually cut it off at Virginia, because I think Virginia would have been that southern state or that one line to say, hey, the three of us against the rest of these. But he didn't. He would go. So keep going ahead.
Okay.
Pennsylvania has 8 votes.
Pennsylvania has 8 there votes. In the division of what is called the northern and southern states, Pennsylvania does not appear to be decidedly in either scale. Though there may be a combination of the northern states, it is not certain that the interests of Pennsylvania will coincide with theirs. If at any time she join us, we shall have 38 against 27. Should she be against us, they will have only 35 to 30. There are two states to the northward who have, in some respect, a similarity of interest with ourselves. What is the situation of New Jersey? It is, in one respect, similar to ours. Most of the goods they use come through New York, and they pay for the benefit of New York as we pay for that of Virginia. It is so with Connecticut, so that in every question between importing and non-importing states, we may expect that two of the northern states would probably join with North Carolina. It is impossible to destroy altogether the idea of separate interests, but the difference between the states does not appear to me so great as the gentleman imagines. And I beg leave to say that in proportion to the increase of population, the southern states will have greater weight than the northern, as they have such large quantities of land still uncultivated, which is not so much the case to the north. If we should suffer a small temporary inconvenience, we shall be compensated for it by having the weight of population in our favor in future.
So I think that they were miscalculating, because they had an agrarian society, and to the north they were more industrious, doing manufacturing and industrial. They were more of an industrial society. And this has been brought up in a few different debates. The next point we're going to bring up is gold and silver, and this is Mr. McLean. And so we've got 2 minutes, 2 minutes and 40 seconds. I think you could probably do this. Go ahead.
Okay. Here we go. Okay. Mr. Chairman, taxes must be paid in gold or silver coin and not imaginary money. As to the subject of taxation, it has been the opinion of many intelligent men that there will be no taxes laid immediately, or if any, that they will be very inconsiderable. There will be no occasion for it, as proper regulations will raise very large sums of money. We know that Congress will have sufficient power to make such regulations. The moment that the Constitution is established, Congress will have credit with foreign nations. Our situation being known, they can borrow any sum. It would be better for them to raise any money they want present by borrowing than by taxation. It is well known that in this country, gold and silver vanish when paper money is made. When we adopt, if ever, gold and silver will again appear in circulation. People will not let their hard money go because they know that paper money cannot repay it. After the war, we had more money in gold and silver in circulation than we have nominal money now. Suppose Congress wished to raise $1 million of money more than the imposts. Suppose they borrow it. They can easily borrow it in Europe at 4%. The interest of that sum will be but $40,000. So that the people, instead of having, £40,000. So people, instead of having the whole 1 million pounds to pay, will have 40 million pounds to pay, which will hardly be felt. The proportion of 40,000, I'm getting my numbers wrong.
That's okay.
Okay.
You know what? Because we're coming close. And so
I might want to reread that last paragraph.
Yeah, okay. We'll start off with, they can easily borrow money or borrow it in Europe at 4%. So okay. Anyway, we'll pick it up from there, because, they switch from words to numbers with symbols here, which kind of, I get it, it kind of throws you off. But
all right.
What's important, though, is that they're really talking about how the importance of having the species of gold and silver. Because the question is, how, if the states can pay their debt in paper money, how would we pay the debt in England or in Europe? Probably by the same, not necessarily by the species. So we're at the hard break. And so we need to take a quick break, folks. So we're going to be right back after this promo. So hang on, and we'll be picking up this gold and silver point from McLean in just a second. So we'll be right back. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, health care, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so now that we're back, let me go ahead and pick up right there where we kind of got into the difficult part of currency.
Right, okay. They can easily borrow it in Europe at 4%. The interest of that sum will be but £40,000, so that the people, instead of having the whole £1 million to pay, will have but £40,000 to pay, which will hardly be filled. The proportion of £40,000 for this state would be a trifle. In 7 years' time, the people would be able, by only being obliged to pay the interest annually, to save money and pay the whole principal perhaps afterwards without much difficulty. Congress will not lay a single tax when it is not to the advantage of the people at large. The Western lands will also be a considerable fired.
Yes.
I wonder if that was transcribed correctly.
Probably not. I mean, it doesn't make sense, but that may have been an application of a different type of word, right?
Right. Okay, sure. The sale of them will aid the revenue greatly, and we have reason to believe the impost will be productive.
Ah. So another use of that word would be enthusiastic, passionate.
Okay.
Okay. Excited. Okay.
Yeah, okay, I see. The Western lands will also be a considerable fired. I understand. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So, in other words, they would be able to start generating revenue as the economy starts moving westward. And so the next one, and this is kind of interesting, this is where they get into religion. And they spend a lot of time, and this is where they bring up the dreaded Mohammedans.
Ooh, okay. This is Mr. Henry Abbott.
Uh-huh.
Some are afraid. Okay, and I guess he's referring, this says here, to the last clause of the sixth article. Okay, this must have to do with, does this have to do with the religious test?
Yes, the religious test, correct.
Yeah. Okay. Some are afraid, Mr. Chairman, that should the Constitution be received, they would be deprived of the privilege of worshiping God according to their consciences, which would be taking from them a benefit they enjoy under the present Constitution. They wish to know if their religious and civil liberties be secured under this system, or whether the general government may not make laws infringing their religious liberties. The worthy member from Edenton mentioned sundry political reasons why treaties should be the supreme law of the land. It is feared by some people that by the power of making treaties, they might make a treaty engaging with foreign powers to adopt the Roman Catholic religion in the United States, which would prevent the people from worshiping God according to their own consciences.
Okay, so let me just interrupt real quick.
Okay.
Remember, it had already been defined regarding the Constitution that they could not make a treaty that was not within their authority. In other words, based on this treaty, is the Constitution enumerate the ability to regulate religion or have any jurisdiction or power or authority over religion at all in the Constitution without the Bill of Rights even being added to it? Is there any mention of religion being given to the government to basically have any say over?
None whatever.
None. So in other words, they could not make a treaty because it is not under their authority. So,
correct.
Okay, so keep going.
All right. The worthy member from Halifax has in some measure satisfied my mind on this subject, but others may be dissatisfied. Many wish to know what religion shall be established. I believe a majority of the community are Presbyterians. I am, for my part, against any exclusive establishment, but if there were any, I would prefer the Episcopal. The exclusion of religious tests is by many thought dangerous and impolitic. They suppose that if there be no religious test required, pagans, deists, and Mohammedans might obtain office among us, and that the senators and representatives might all be pagans. Every person employed by the general and state governments is to take an oath to support the former. Some are desirous to know how and by whom they are to swear, since no religious tests are required. Whether they are to swear by Jupiter, Juno, Minerva, Proserpine, or Pluto, we ought to be suspicious of our liberties. We have felt the effects of oppressive measures and know the happy consequences of being jealous of our rights. I would be glad some gentlemen would endeavor to obviate these objections in order to satisfy the religious art of the society. Could I be convinced that the objections were well-founded, I would then declare my opinion against the Constitution. Says Mr. Abbott added several other observations, but spoke too low to be heard. This is interesting because he talks about the various religions that could wind up in office and then says, but we have the oath.
Uh-huh. Yes, that they have to support the Constitution. Correct. Right. And so the question is, what are they swearing under? Are they swearing? So this is why, and now, you know, this cracks open this conversation. Mm-hmm. If a person who swears, who actually, you know, let's just say you practice a particular faith, and that faith places the law of the church, their religion, above the Constitution, then that faith is incapable of becoming a citizen. That faith is incapable of actually being a public servant. See, this is the interesting thing, that you cannot be in contrary to your obligation as a citizen, period. And every citizen is required by law to take up arms to defend and support that Constitution against who? Enemies foreign and domestic. So in other words, if people are trying to create and support laws that are in conflict with that Constitution, then they can no longer be a citizen, nor can they ever be a citizen. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
Okay.
It's a strong position. So let me ask you a question.
So it is a legally binding requirement for every citizen, because every state in the union has the responsibility to order their citizens to support and defend the Constitution and to take up arms. Now, if you have a conscientious objection from taking up arms, that's one thing. But if you're a part of a faith that actually places their faith above the laws of the land, the supreme law of the land, because you got to understand, the supreme law of the land does not dictate religion.
Correct.
It leaves that to you. So even a Christian could recognize that this Constitution creates no threat whatsoever towards Christianity.
Right.
And so any religion that would have a conflict with that and say, no, we demand our religious laws be observed, then we have a problem. And that right there is a direct insurgency against the Constitution.
Correct.
By mere fact of your membership to that faith means that you are obligated to support that insurgency. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
And so, if your faith actually has doctrine that allows you to be lie and be deceitful, then that even becomes a greater threat and risk to our liberties and sovereignty.
Is there a faith like that?
Yes. The faith of Islam, there's two different doctrines, and it's called the Taqiyya. There's the Taqiyya. So the Taqiyya is about, it's okay to lie, you know, to further the cause of Islam. You can lie to any heathen. And if the heathen happens to be the government, then you can lie.
Mm.
And then there is another one that is regarding, I always forget this one, regarding immigration or migration. They have a doctrine that basically, you know, teaches them to go into other states without warring and then, you know, mass populate, have lots of wives and lots of children, and basically, you know, assimilate that state into Mohammedism through this mass migration and growth of population.
Mm.
So the framers were all aware of this, by the way. They were aware of both of these doctrines. As a matter of fact, Thomas Jefferson became aware of it when he actually started working in France regarding some kind of treaty or what have you, where they actually, this ambassador that he was dealing with out of the Ottoman Empire lied to him. And he goes, what is this? I mean, you know, you seem to be a man of faith and you seem to be a man of honor. How can you, you know, be in, you know, honoring your faith if you're lying? And so that's when he got himself, you know, the Quran and so forth. And I think he got the copy of the Quran and Hadiths, went through it, and he found these doctrines that it is okay to actually lie to heathens to further the cause of Islam.
So did Jefferson make any pronouncements after that?
Yes, as a matter of fact, he in his own personal Quran, he actually wrote, and as a matter of fact, Glenn Beck made a big deal about this, and rightfully so, but Thomas Jefferson basically said, these people cannot ever come here, which is one of the reasons why they were banned from ever coming here or trying to migrate here as citizens, period. They were not allowed, and I don't think that they were allowed until the end of the 19th century. All of a sudden, we became so tolerant that we let the camel's nose in the tent. Let me circle back around. Regardless of the mistake being made, regardless of people not knowing and allowing, let's just say that these evil people like Wilson and so forth that actually started helping these people come in to create the first mosque in America wasn't until the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
So, understanding that, a mosque means that there's a certain population that has been obtained to actually, you know, need to have a mosque and the function of a mosque. And so, which means that they have dominance in that area. When they have enough population in a percentage, and I don't know if it's one-third or what have you, where, you know, now they can have this big edifice to where they can have their secret meetings and so forth. But anyway, nevertheless, regardless of the mistakes being made, it is clear that when you connect the dots, the framers really created a system that, you know, really pokes us in the eye saying, how can these people even be citizens? They can't. It's one thing to say possibly they can be inhabitants, but there needs to really be a plan to repatriate them back to the land that they come from, that they hail. Either that, or, you know, they're going to be inhabitants until, you know, I hate to say it, but they either have to abjure their faith and their religion and, you know, go down a different path. But even communists cannot be trusted because they may not have a religious ideology, but their secularism is a religious ideology. And if you really...
Go ahead.
So if you look at a communist wants to invoke, they have no desire to live within the laws of this land to actually support liberty, where people have the freedom to choose. They don't have an oppressive government that basically takes from them and gives to another. Those are antithetical to the principles of our Constitution and our government. So a communist actually wants to invoke those types of laws and move America into communism, to basically, and they do it unconstitutionally. In other words, if you look at all of the things from healthcare, welfare, education, and all of these things, that's all a part of communism. Because centralizing all of that and having the control and having the messaging, and you know, the federal government has no authority to do any of these things.
So, calls for Sharia law.
Uh-huh. Is treason. Is treason in America. It's a direct violation of the Constitution. And see, most everybody believes, oh, well, you know, you got that right of religion. No. Your religious rights cannot actually try to subvert and actually, you know, convert our Republican form of government into a theocracy. Sorry. The United States shall guarantee a Republican form of government, not a theocracy.
Right.
So when you really look at the big picture of connecting all the dots of how they laid everything out, like the guarantee clause of, you know, that every state would be guaranteed a Republican form of government, which means that if there are any states of Islam, any small little pieces of land where Islam is able to, you know, invoke Sharia law, then that is an abomination in America. And I'm sorry, it's not an abomination of Christianity, it's an abomination to the Constitution. Mm-hmm. You cannot have a theocracy. I mean, even if, you know, some Christian faith tried to do something like that, to say, we're going to only practice these laws and we're not going to recognize that law, boop, right there, they cross the line.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a wow.
Yeah, okay. I to me, you prove me wrong. Show me where the federal government is not responsible for guaranteeing that we have a Republican form of government. It's right there as the supreme law of the land.
It's right there.
Right. And prove me wrong that all people, you know, from citizens and public service, we all have an accountability of supporting the Constitution. And it says right, you know, in our fundamental documents, if you do anything, I mean, Congress has created this facade going after people that are supporting the Constitution and call them an insurrectionist. When clearly the insurrections are happening in Dearborn, Michigan, and all these other places where they actually...
And in Congress.
Or even at Dulles Airport where there's calls to prayer.
What do you mean?
If you go through Dulles Airport and you sit there and you have a layover, you have to wait long enough, you'll actually hear Dulles Airport over their 1MC, their announcement system, they'll actually say it's call to prayer time.
For who?
For the Islamists that work there, for the Mohammedans. Anyway, so this is a good discussion, isn't it?
Whoa.
Okay, oh, so I'm not sure if you remember where you kind of left off, but I just
where did I leave off? You know what? Hang on a minute.
Just start from the beginning.
Okay. All right, sure. Mr. Chairman, nothing is more desirable than to remove the scruples of any gentleman on this interesting subject. That's where I am, right? This is Mr. Aridell.
Go ahead, yeah.
Okay. Those concerning religion are entitled to particular respect. I do not expect any objection to this particular regulation, which, in my opinion, is calculated to prevent evils of the most pernicious consequences to society. Every person in the least conversant in the history of mankind knows that dreadful mischiefs have been committed by religious persecutions. Under the color of religious tests, the utmost cruelties have been exercised. Those in power have generally considered all wisdom centered in themselves, that they alone had a right to dictate to the rest of mankind, and that all opposition to their tenets was profane and impious. The consequence of this intolerant spirit had been that each church has in turn set itself up against every other, and persecutions and wars of the most implacable and bloody nature have taken place in every part of the world. America has set an example to mankind to think more modestly and reasonably, that men may be of different religious sentiments from their own without being a bad member of society. The principles of toleration to the honor of this age are doing away those errors and prejudices which have so long prevailed, even in the most tolerant countries. In the Roman Catholic countries, principles of moderation are adopted which would have been spurned a century or two ago. I should be sorry to find, when examples of toleration are set even by arbitrary governments, that this country, so impressed with the highest sense of liberty, should adopt principles on this subject that were narrow and illiberal.
Okay, so let me actually inject a question, because this came to my mind. Because all laws in pursuance to the Constitution are what?
The supreme law of the land.
The supreme law of the land. So let me ask you this. Does the federal government have the ability to make all citizens accountable to supporting the Constitution as a part of its citizenship?
Well, so probably so. Imagine this. If you're a...
just remember what I just said.
Okay.
All laws in pursuance to this Constitution are the supreme law of the land. So if you make a law that demands that all citizens must support and defend the Constitution, the supreme law of the land, is that in pursuance to the Constitution? It's in pursuance to the Supremacy Clause itself. Okay. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So in other words, the divine hand of providence gave us everything we need to stop the evil from within.
Wow. Everything.
And so we've talked about this a lot, and folks, you don't hear me say this, but you hear me say it every once in a while. But I tell people that you cannot, when you really start fathoming this Constitution, you cannot see, or you cannot fail to see His DNA in it.
Wow.
Okay. So, go ahead and pick it back up where you left off.
Okay. I consider the clause under consideration as one of the strongest proofs that could be adduced that it was the intention of those who formed this system to establish a general religious liberty in America. Were we to judge from the examples of religious tests in other countries, we should be persuaded that they do not answer the purpose for which they are intended. What is the consequence of such in England? In that country, no man can be a member in the House of Commons or hold any office under the crown without taking the sacrament according to the rites of the church. This, in the first instance, must degrade and profane a rite which never ought to be taken but from a sincere principle of devotion. To a man of base principles, it is made a mere instrument of civil policy. The intention was to exclude all persons from offices but the members of the Church of England. Yet it is notorious that dissenters qualified themselves for offices in this manner, though they never conformed to the church on any other occasion. And men of no religion at all have no scruple to make use of this qualification. Isn't that interesting? So in other words, there are people of no scruples who are willing to just, you know, do it so they can be in office.
That's correct. I mean, these guys weren't born yesterday, right? I mean, they knew that there were those types of people that existed.
Right.
Okay, so even if you had a religious test, there would be people that would be, you know, studious enough to pass a religious test and still not follow it, and still not be that religious person that they tested to be. This is why we can actually point to those that are of a particular faith that would be pernicious and subversive to the Constitution.
It is also why the radical ratification debates are such a treasure because you've got arguments here you can't find anywhere else.
That's right. This is not in the Federalist Papers. Having read the Federalist Papers a few times, you know, you don't have these legal insights. And again, because they're actually stipulating and clarifying all of this, this really lays it down. And these are legally binding terms and definitions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So just imagine if all of the states actually definitize the Constitution to basically state that if you have a religious faith that does not consider and support wholeheartedly by being willing to pick up the arms and use deadly force to support and defend this Constitution, then you cannot be a citizen, nor can you have the rights. Because you got to remember that the privileges and immunities, inalienable rights that are given to, you know, all men, are not protected in America. Only those citizens have those rights.
Correct.
In other words, they can't have guns. I mean, they can be inhabitants, possibly. But I say that we, you know, we shouldn't have, you know, it is mischief when you start allowing a size of a regiment, a size of a division of men, you know, that, you know, are actually in your midst. It's one thing for an outlier here or there, but it's another thing to have a whole community that will somehow take, because, I mean, we've seen even in prison where they have no weapons, where they become innovative to take over. So go ahead, keep going. We've got we've got less than 2 minutes, so try to wrap it up.
Okay.
And we'll find a point. Okay. Go ahead and find a point you can end.
It never was known that a man who had no principles of religion hesitated to perform any rite when it was convenient for his private interest. No test can bind such a one. I'm therefore clearly of opinion that such a discrimination would neither be effectual for its own purposes, nor if it could, ought it by any means be made. Upon the principles I have stated, I confess the restriction on the power of Congress in this particular has my hearty approbation. They certainly have no authority to interfere with the establishment of any religion whatsoever, and I am astonished that any gentleman should conceive they have. Is there any power given to Congress in matters of religion? Can they pass a single act to impair our religious liberties? If they could, it would be a just cause of alarm. If they could, sir, no man would have more horror against it than myself. Happily, no sect here is superior to another. As long as this is the case, we shall be free from those persecutions and distractions with which other countries have been torn. If any future Congress should pass an act concerning the religion of the country, it would be an act which they are not authorized to pass by the Constitution and which the people would not obey. Everyone would ask, who authorized the government to pass such an act? It is not warranted by the Constitution. It is barefaced usurpation. The power to make treaties can never be supposed to include a right to establish a foreign religion among ourselves, though it might authorize a toleration of others.
There you go, right there. So he actually jumped into that. And now, thank you so much for being a part of this. And again, we've got just seconds left. Thank you again.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we got to get going. And so with that, what we're going to do is we're going to bring Paul right back tomorrow to, you know, pick up again. You know, I hope you're realizing what nuggets, what gold and treasure the ratification debates really provide us. It is the scriptures to the Constitution. I am G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.